Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 171, episode 5 of Dear Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. There's a little noise in the background. A young prince is rummaging around. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It is February 12th, 2021. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Zeitgeist, Zeitgeist, the daily Zeitgeist. I love cake and have hot takes. No coal gas means less suicide. Zeitgeist, Zeitgeist, the daily Zeitgeist. That is for a handful of parents who have heard the hot dog song. Ramsey, what'd you think of that? Did I nail it? My 4-year-old is here. How was it? Good? Yeah. And I'm thrilled to
that was great.
Like,
yeah, sure thing, man. Anyway, make with the cookies.
That is courtesy of Anarcho Gunhaver, based on the They Might Be Giants Mickey Mouse Club theme song. And I'm thrilled to be joined once again by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
They said he's so hungry. Subway so far, so he cries, cries, cries in his Mazda car, thinking if there's nothing missing in his life, then why is he craved tuna subs at night?
Oh, wow.
And there's a tear trickles down my face for that one. That is from Christy Yamaguchi Main on the Discord, or Gucci Slain, or whatever. I'll use your biblical historical name.
Yes.
Will.
Yeah, yeah. That was beautiful.
Yeah, thank you for that. Let's give
it a moment.
Yep.
Well, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious and talented Kyle Ayers.
Thank you. You know, as Christy Yamaguchi Main, that's art. That name is art.
Yeah. It's, I mean,
I would expect no less from that. I would be so happy if I thought of that. I wouldn't do anything the rest of that day. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I've done some stuff
yet
today.
Yet he persists. It's the hustle. You got to admire it. How was your week? How was that Super Bowl for you, Kyle?
Oh, it was bad. You know, as far as like one isolated game, I'm a Chiefs fan, so.
Right, I remember.
It was fun to answer the question, does football have to be a team sport?
It turns
out. We all got to answer it, and it turns out, yeah, you need a team. Because can one man do it? No. Will that stop him from trying? Absolutely not.
Man, that was, like, as bad as that game was for the Chiefs, like, just some of the throws he was making, Patrick Mahomes, like, as he was, like, there was one throw, you know, he was just running around for his life behind the line of scrimmage.
Yes. But
he was, like, making throws, like, with his head like almost on the ground, like
incomplete passes
down.
You've
ever
seen.
Ever.
Oh no!
And it sounds dumb to be like, "What a great incomplete!" But it
right
had he had that were dropped. That's what the most frustrating part is.
Yeah.
Hit a man
always
in the face mask in the end zone while throwing the ball while he's parallel to the ground. Had he caught that, the highlight still would have kind of disappeared because they lost. But it's.
But would they have lost?
I don't think it's a hyperbole for me to say. That might have been the greatest throw I've ever seen in my life, and it doesn't matter. Because you know how you, like, you always hear, like the best this, the funniest thing that's ever been said was probably not during a stand-up show. The greatest basketball shot that's ever been made was probably a backyard horse shot none of us saw.
Right, right.
That was the greatest throw I've ever seen in my life, and it got dropped. It hit a dude in the face. It was hit a guy in the face mask.
Hitting people in the hands and the face mask, and they were dropping it. It is like, if all of the catchable balls he threw had been caught, I don't know that you guys would have lost. Even
the game maybe
it
goes
was
in a different path.
Right,
too many things went wrong to say that. Like, there were a lot of bad penalties that I disagreed with for the first quarter and a half. But then they did not have an offensive line, which you need.
You need
it.
Yeah.
It felt like, have you ever played a video game against someone who knew the buttons?
Right.
Right.
This is like if I've never played Madden, but I pick the best team, I'm going to get some weird plays by just hitting X.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Right. Even if I don't know what's going on. That's kind of what it felt like. And it was not fun to watch, but I'm still, you try and keep things in perspective. Sports fandom is such a bizarre thing. If you think about it, like, it's a reality show I've been watching my whole life.
Right.
And they finally rewarded my character last year after 30 years of them not getting
like,
so
Susan Lucci Emmy win after decades of being
it felt more like the Peter O'Toole Oscar win where we were 140 years in and they were like, he might not be here next year. And so this is, I still have to be like, I can't believe that guy's the quarterback of the team I watch.
Right.
He's the most fun. Kansas City's never had the most fun player in any sport. Now they have Steph Curry, which is like, he's probably the best, and he's by far the most fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just got to be happy to be there. I'm just, I am tired of Tom Brady, and that's not even his fault. Well, it is, but not a negative thing to him.
Yeah. Right. All right. Kyle, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment.
Yeah.
First, just a few of the things we're talking about. We finally got sort of a analysis of what American life would look like, what the last year would have looked like with a competent or at least an averagely competent response to the COVID pandemic. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Republicans reacting to the impeachment trial and QAnon reacting to the president's loss, or I guess America.
Shout out QAnon.
Yeah, shout out to Q. We will talk.
Kyle's got a new audience he's working with.
We'll talk about Gina Carano getting dropped from The Mandalorian. Cocaine hippopotamuses, which is a fun phrase. We'll talk about the just very strange drama behind the Game of Thrones guy, Benioff and Weiss's new Netflix show, which is that series, The Three Body Problem, that I have been halfway through reading for a while.
Oh. You're not done yet?
Oh, no, man. I gave up on it. But
waiting for that TLDR from you.
I read the Wikipedia summary, so I can still give that to you.
Okay, cool.
And we'll talk about Ted Cruz's relationship to the cast of his favorite movie. All of that, plenty more. But first, Kyle, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are.
So the last thing that I Google searched was tow puppy behind bike thing inexpensive.
Hold on. Let me try. Tow puppy behind bike thing inexpensive.
Yes.
Oh, so a little cart to drag your dog in behind
right.
your bike?
Yes. Okay. Inexpensive.
I'm just trying to envision, because I know Google speak. Yeah, I was like, hold on. This isn't just a jumble of words. It's a real right. thing. Got it. What's that called? The tow puppy
a trailer.
Behind
it's
bike.
Called a trailer. It's the same right. as it is if it's not that. For a dog. It's a word we all know.
Yeah.
Right. But sometimes you got to dance your way around the word before you say it.
Right. Right.
Like, and then you can find it.
Like the media with white supremacy.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, right. yeah.
And then, racially
that
charged,
way you never actually have to say it, but you can find it online.
Provocative language.
Right. Just a bunch of isolated incidents all crowded together in a group of 11,000. 11,000 isolated incidents within 6 feet of each other.
Right.
So you know, these are just some misguided patriots really trying to... So anyways, I got my dog a thin blue line trailer to tow behind my bike.
What's the dog trailer market look
so,
like?
So it's all over the place. I got this mm-hmm. puppy. It's his 5 month birthday today. He was born on September 11th,
wow.
So you can remember. And
not that's why,
on purpose. They didn't
that's
induce
just
labor.
Why you bought. Right. That's why you bought the puppies with that.
It
birthday.
Didn't hurt. I thought.
When's my girlfriend born?
Yeah, I wanted to name him Jet Fuel. That was refused.
Yeah, and then Building so, 7 so, was the other name that didn't work, right?
Right. He had a lot of siblings that we were trying to get to.
Gotcha.
But I wanted to tow him behind my bike because he just likes to be outside. He's real small. I thought it could be fun to go to a dog park with it, and I just thought it'd be funny to have. So I was looking it up, and I feel like this tells a lot about me because bike, puppy, inexpensive are all sort of like three of my top tens.
Nice. Yeah, bike is one of my biggest new things now. I'm just a biking fool.
Yeah,
if I
it's
can
really,
bike
really
somewhere,
nice.
I like to go there because it's like yeah. it's so. I'm realizing the car thing gets stale, and when you're really dealing with like limited stimuli, you really it's like really you have to take it upon yourself to vary your like way you move about and things
this
like that.
This thing happened to me where I told my girlfriend I was going to go to my other room, and I went and sat in my car, and that's when I realized I might need to figure something out with the vehicle. Like it might be getting a little sad and a little isolated here. I was like, I'm going to go my other room, and then I just sat in my car on my phone for a minute to be alone.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe the bike needs to let's air the tires back up.
There you go.
Yeah, people can't tell, but Miles is in a full one of those bike racing outfits.
Yeah,
skin tight.
The Lance Armstrong.
Onesie.
Weirdly enough,
though,
he has
crisis.
The speed walking helmet.
Yeah. Look, I mean, Kyle, man, when you get to some of these speeds, I would be remiss to not take my safety into consideration.
It's smart. It's smart. Yeah. And so I want to get my dog a little thing so he can. That'd be fun to take him out and kind of go explore a little bit. I live in Atwater Village in LA. It's pretty flat. And there's a
right.
path right there. So I think it's manageable. But, you know, you start reading reviews of stuff online, it gets so overwhelming, you don't buy anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Reviews are they're so poisonous. And it's so, like, I've had to develop, and I think most people have to develop, like, the filters to look at a review and understand what is actually trying to be said. Like, whether,
yes.
is this an actual review of the product they bought, or is this person a shitty partner, bought a gift last minute, it didn't arrive on time, it was the wrong color, and they're taking out their shame as a bad partner on this product vis-a-vis the review. Because I see so many restaurant reviews like that, too.
So a phrase that is not held up in any capacity is the customer is always right. That was written by someone who never met a customer.
Yeah, that's just a manipulation tactic to draw the customer further into your financial trap.
Uh-huh,
yeah. Come on in, come on. Yeah, sign that, you're ready. Yeah, no problem, we'll do that, And now you owe us your baby.
Yeah, so I didn't buy one because they're too many. But, you know, I'm going to find one. If anyone has Rex, send them to me. And I think it'd be fun to sort of bop around with them and be that guy. And then I'm slowly trying to become that guy in all the harmless possible ways in my new neighborhood.
Right.
It's the bike. It's the dog bike guy. Yeah. What is something you think is underrated?
So I think I asked This morning while I was eating breakfast, I asked my girlfriend, both underrated and over, what are things I think are underrated and overrated? And she goes, oh, you think everything's overrated? And I was like, okay, what's something I think is underrated? And she goes, oh, you think everything is underrated? And I was like, I can't be both. And then I was like, give me a specific example of either. And she goes, I can't think of any. And I was like, this sounds like a you thing. This sounds like something you're projecting onto me. No details.
I think
comedy acting is so underrated.
Yes.
As an actual art form.
Right.
I think that acting in a comedy is hard, and I think it is underrated because people are like, look at the funny person being funny. I think, and I say to this day often, Rachel McAdams deserved an Oscar nomination for Mean Girls, and there are 10 equivalent performances every 10 years.
Yeah.
In comedy that no one else could do.
It's so funny, too, because it's even the thing that actors acknowledge is harder than the thing they're constantly like lauded for. You know, when people are like, oh, my, the dramatic performance, like, I'm going to be honest with you, comedy is way harder than
it's so much harder to be funny than it is to pretend to be Lyndon Johnson or whatever award someone's winning.
It's actually hard to pretend to be Lyndon Johnson and that not be funny. As since he was somebody
you're talking about the new movie Lyndon B. Laughing?
He did use his AIDS as piss screens.
And just like those calls, I mean, how do you do with a straight face to say bunghole like he does and like try and be
while being sworn in.
Right. And have that delivered.
While being sworn in with
Jackie widow. Kennedy standing right there.
Bunghole. I'm just saying, it's a funny word.
Faithfully execute the duties of this office upon my bunghole. All right.
He has his entire suit pulled up over the top of his head like Beavis.
Like Cornholio?
Yeah, Cornholio pulled up over his head.
That dude is one of my, like, Daniel O'Brien from Cracked and now Last Week Tonight used to talk about, like, just there's all these wild stories behind the scenes. He would make reporters do interviews with him while he was pooping on the toilet, like, because it was like a power move of some sort.
Hell yeah.
He would show people his what he called big jumbo, because I guess he had a big penis.
He exposed himself a lot to people.
Yeah, tons.
Why am I surprised that someone who runs the United States isn't also flashing their dick when they get the chance at some point?
Imagine running a country because a guy died and not having a weird ego.
Right, exactly.
And then being like, well, he left me with a fucking mess of a country right now.
Right.
Fuck.
Well, I mean, that's assuming that he had nothing to do with it, which now
you've seen the picture. You've seen the picture. Why was he ever smiling?
He's like looking over at JFK like, ooh.
But sorry, I distracted from your point, which I think is a really good one. Like, it's definitely harder to pull off. And, like, in the case of Rachel McAdams, like, that is a more lasting performance than any dramatic performance from that year. Like, culturally impactful. Sorry, my son is... Ramsey, are you...
He doesn't like this take.
He's been, honestly, laying on the ground and, like, stage yawning during, like, every time I talk. Just being like, oh, man.
Oh man, coal gas study.
Oh, you're on that one again, Dad. But it's all just about how, like, that's a youth, like the audience thing, wanting to feel when they won't nominate any comedy movies for Oscars. That's just because the Academy voters watching it want to feel like they're doing something serious, and therefore, like it's them. It has nothing to do with like the actual power or cultural impact, or
it does feel
like
a lot like you're right. It is jealousy. I will say the word. I don't know what comedies came out the year Manchester by the Sea came out, but I bet there are a bunch of comedians who are good at being funny and can look like sad sacks of shit. And so I think that I don't know much about Casey Affleck. I don't care to learn anything more about him. And I think he's been better in other movies, but that movie was just a guy being sad, and and his version of sad was being quiet. And so. He won an Oscar because a cinematographer was good at making him look sad.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Give me I mean, Give me Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, which is comedic and dramatic. Give me Rachel McAdams in Mean Girls. Give me everyone in Bridesmaids. I don't know. Will Ferrell probably should have won an Oscar for Anchorman. We're still talking about it, and no one else could have done it like that.
Absolutely.
People just don't value it as an art form, but then if they when they try and do it, they look a fool, or they're just...
Right.
Yeah.
Give me like, Casey Affleck using a baseball glove for cleanup. Like, I'll take that over Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's, you know, like they're, like you're saying, Jack, like they can't really acknowledge how significant comedy is to culture and like how much of a lasting impression that leaves on the audience. Like, more people quote, you know, not that it's, I'm saying this is needs to get an Academy Award, but more people will quote Dumb and Dumber than fucking Saving Private Ryan or something like that. Like, there's something about comedy that, like, it really uplifts us, and, like, we can draw upon something positive just, like, with a recollection of it. And, like, granted, of course, like, dramatic acting is an art form in and of itself as well, but
and
to not, like,
impossible
hold it
to
up,
do art form.
Right.
And it's also wild.
Yeah, like, so to not hold them up and be able to say, like, it's like the Grammys saying, like, the only music is classical music.
Right.
It's like,
yeah, exactly.
No, you idiot. What are you talking about? Like, people turn up to all this other shit. Like,
I don't know if
we
need
to
just do
that.
Like, Oscars need to do what the Golden Globes do. But then generally the Golden Globes gives the best comedic or musical performance to whatever is the most dramatic thing that pretends to be a comedy.
To be,
like Martian
to game the
or
system.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. The most dramatic movie that also made us laugh this year.
Yeah.
I also wonder if there's something changing because, like, not to keep hearkening back to Cracked, I have Cracked on my brain, but the first podcast we did on for the Cracked podcast was about like how comedy like ages poorly compared to drama, and like old comedy movies aren't really funny anymore except for like the Marx Brothers, because they went town to town and just like honed these jokes that were like funny irrelevant of what town they were doing it in. I just wonder if like now it seems like things have like we still think Anchorman is funny. I don't know, you guys are younger than me, but like it seems like people
I do think that fewer comedies hold up over long term than dramas that do.
Yeah.
And I think even fewer dramas hold up than like an action. Like Die Hard is so old at this point by movie standards and feels like a movie that could have come out a year ago. But comedies from that year, there's like a Naked Gun sequel, which has probably kind of funny, but doesn't hold up as much as these other things. So it seems to be like the couple of comedies from most years that hold up, whether it's like Groundhog Day or Airplane or movies like that that hold up for a while. But I kind of think blockbusters tend to hold up the best. We still watch Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's
true. Everything that is an Avatar, we'll still go back and watch.
Jaws, I think, is often cited as one of the movies that holds up the best.
And that's a whole nother Oscar gripe that I have is, we don't acknowledge that these movies that influence culture more than anything else should get any sort of nomination for this stuff, let alone stunt people in movies, let alone acknowledging that computers help make movies now.
Academy Awards could be so much more fun. Yeah.
It like feels like the Major League Baseball of awards. Yes.
Yeah, it's funny.
Where you're like, come
kind
on.
Kind of where like the MTV Movie Awards got it right, where they'd get super specific, like, wildest fucking fight scene.
Yeah.
And then
you're
like, oh shit. Like, it actually gave you something like really, you're like actually comparing like from Blade 2. I'm like, okay, let's like watch this fight scene and trying to even. Yeah. I remember watching the shit and like talking to my friends, like, you really thought that was better? From Matrix, okay, whatever, okay. Like,
just make some more awards. I don't know, John Wick get nominated for nothing? We all talked about it for 4 years.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I guess that's where it's like, I wonder if the Academy can take itself a little less seriously and understand that, like, film itself is something much larger than, like,
if the people who call themselves the Academy can take themselves less seriously.
Yeah.
You're talking about a bunch of people who work in something they call the industry. And I say they, I'm part of that. But the industry, maybe doctors should be the industry.
Yeah.
And everyone
making
up
like
I work in
racist
film.
Lies that poison our brains. Like, you think, because, like, also, too, you look at a movie like Crash, that one Best Picture in 2006, that motherfucker doesn't hold up at
all. It's a punchline.
It didn't hold up when
it became a punchline in an hour.
Of course. I mean, for people who had half a brain in 2006, you're like, are y'all seeing this? And then you're like, okay, so white people are in charge of everything, and, like, it was hitting a little ally chord, so people are like, oh, this is so good, this is so good, so good.
Yeah. Yeah, and they would never make that mistake again 2 years ago with Green Book.
I mean, how I would be so much more they keep talking about, like, people aren't as interested in the Oscars anymore. Like, if they just did an award that was the best special effect in any movie, and you just got to see, like, how they did it, like,
I would love that.
That would be so fun. Like, because they do that with, like, they have the, like, behind the scenes costuming and, like, all these things they do to honor those arts. But, like, I don't know. That would be
that
dope.
Behind the scenes, because, you know what, I feel like we lost, like, we sort of lost the magic of filmmaking too, because we don't see as much behind the scenes stuff. Remember, like, on HBO, part of the whole marketing thing would be a 15-minute behind inside look at the making of a film that was coming out, and you get to see, like, them between takes, the technology being used, and that, for me as a child, like, anything that was behind the scenes, anything, always had my imagination going even further, because I'm like, oh wow, like, this is how you do it, these are jobs you could have, this, that, and the other. And I think, because, like, with that content being less there, it's like we're just focusing, like, the actors more, and we only think, like, the one thing you do is be pretty in front of camera and talk.
You always hear stories about how those behind the scenes are what prompted so and so to become a filmmaker, or so and so to get. Every time you ever see any visual effects person, they're like, "I saw a 10-minute behind the scenes about how a head exploded in Evil Dead, and I wanted to do this, and now I'm." And I'm. That's beautiful. Yeah. The credits are so long.
Right. Yeah. The credits are so long. What is something you think is overrated?
Okay. This. I wrote two things down. One is too specific. And the other one is all okay. First thing, the style of all those, how every home ends up in an HGTV renovation show. Everyone's house is looking the same now.
Yeah.
Don't live in a barn.
Everyone and wants new barn, Cape Cod shit.
I call the look wedding invitation. That seems to be the look that a lot of houses are ending up to be right now. I call it wedding invitation. And it's crazy because I think you know what I'm talking about.
I know.
Half script.
Oh, yeah.
Everything is, oh, you know, we installed a barn. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to open up this space. We're going to expose those beams, throw an island in there. And then what we're going to do is everything's going to be half in cursive, half not in cursive. And it's going to look like no one lives here. It's going to look like we took the air out of the room B&B. And those shows are kind of watchable because I think it's fun to watch them destroy houses. But then at the end, every single one looks the same. And then you start noticing them in your neighborhood. You're like,
right,
oh, this looks like a flip house. Don't worry, we gutted the porch. We put two rocking chairs on there.
Painted everything white.
Everything is white. The outside's black. And then
everything's
reclaimed.
We actually were able to go down to the original beams and then restore those.
And
which I get,
like wood floors. I like wood beams, but they all look the same. They all look like a wedding invitation. They all look like, oh, this house, it was designed by two sentient mason jars. And what they did is, and that's like what it all feels like. I don't even hate the
and the
those
and like
they're
the
good mindless TV,
live, laugh,
and then I get mad. Yeah, everyone, every one of them. Then by the end of it, I'm like, I swear to God, if they put another free, if they change, just I want to look, I want to see what it looks like when the people move their crap in that doesn't match. I want to see what,
like,
it looks like when they're like
shit.
Fighting over if the guy can keep his lazy boy. Like, I just want to kind of see what it looks like when they're done. They're so generic, it makes me frustrated with it. And that's a very fun. Mindless watch are a lot of these renovation shows, but then at that point I'm like, why does this guy look the same? If they showed me that, I'd be like, why am I living in a model home?
Yeah, or just specialize them. Like, be like, yo, what's the goth version?
Because that's what Pimp My Ride did so well. That wasn't practical at all because it was cars.
Yeah.
Pimp My Ride would be like, okay, so we fixed your engine, we got you new brakes, we did put a fish tank instead of a passenger seat.
Also, good luck in affording insurance on this new car.
There is a live fish. You have to feed your car because we saw on Zanga 7 years ago. You said you like fish, so we put a fish tank in, and at least. But then it's a car. It's not practical. In a house, give them the stuff they like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
I can't imagine the engine. That's fun. You ever read old Pimp My Ride people who are on there talking about how they just gutted and sold their car 2 weeks after the show?
Exactly. They're like, I couldn't afford that shit. It's impractical. But like, yeah, even like that new style, the fucking new barn Cape Cod, like those,
everything's,
you know,
gotta
people
be a
do
barn.
The door that like slides across, on a hinge. Have you ever been to a house and tried to take a shit with a door like that? Yes. You don't feel like you have privacy.
Right.
Weird. Welcome. And I'm
my
like,
house is a bar in Bushwick. That is my water closet is right over there. It says WC on my bathroom door. And you're like, please just let me go.
Yeah. I got this old pickle barrel that we use to house the toilet. So it's real whimsical in there.
My great grandmother, her remains are the bathtub.
But we took down all the pictures of her and put up pictures that are
and
a little
no
bit more
TVs
like tasteful.
In this house. They're like, we put 17 different chairs and a poof in here in the kids' room. And you're like, I know what the kids want. You should put USB ports in the outlets.
Right.
You should have put USB ports in the outlets.
Yes. I need 40-foot USB cables that they can just walk around with their iPads just to leave me alone.
There's no router in the house you just made.
Chip and Joanna Gaines, they're fucking up this entire country.
I think that's the people I'm talking about.
Is.
I think that's the people I'm talking about because theirs is even more repetitive than most of the other ones.
It's offensive. Chip and Joanna, I mean, like the whole like Magnolia Network fucking industry brand that they have. It's like you're just, it's funny because like in certain places, especially like America, like we have such a consumer culture. Like we just take our cues from ads and TV. Like no one actually develops their own taste a lot of the time. Like it's sort of like a collection of Instagram posts. And like with Chip and Joanna Gaines and like that Magnolia aesthetic, like that is like the new thing everyone just sort of like is like aspiring to mindlessly. If you have,
but
really
you know what is timeless in a home is your stuff and your life, and that's wish I saw a little bit of this.
And
always
stories, about the things you have. Photos.
Right, people
of
are
going
to move into them. They picked their art for the walls and stuff, and I'm just like, but don't you? What do you? Why would you want someone else to put that stuff on the wall?
Plus, most of the time, you're actually paying like at least 80% of it for that anyway. So that's how those shows work.
The Property Brothers just like redid, like basically took a house down in my neighborhood to like studs, build it back up. Looks like exactly what you're talking about.
Dog shit.
And like sold it at like
the we've taken
most
the actual practical
premium.
Love of hardwood floors and gone too far with it. Hardwood floors are wonderful, but everyone agreeing that those are good has like now turned into this entire thing.
The whole house is hardwood floor.
Your ceilings are hardwood floors. Don't touch them.
One of the Property Brothers is dating Zooey Deschanel, which feels like the most perfect like accoutrement to like their aesthetic sense.
That's
is
so
like.
Funny. And so in your house, I actually have my girlfriend, Zooey Deschanel. She stands in the corner all of the time. But the dress she's wearing actually complements the fan above your stove.
Right. All right. Let's take a quick break, and we will be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
And we're back. Let's talk about some bullshit. Actually, I've kind of been waiting for this study to happen without realizing it. Somebody did a study to see, like, what would America have looked like if they had had a competent pandemic response.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the medical journal, The Lancet, they're the ones who put this study out. And it's just like, sort of, it's like a study that's sickening and no shit at the same time. Like, yeah. When you just see it. Well, the top line is basically that 40% of the COVID deaths that occurred in the United States were preventable. And but they're also saying it's not just Trump. Like, this is sort of part and parcel of the momentum we have with our just deteriorating healthcare system. But what they're saying in this article or this study is, quote, many of the cases and deaths were avoidable. Instead of galvanizing the U.S. populace to fight the pandemic, President Trump publicly dismissed its threat, despite privately acknowledging it, discouraged action on as infection spread, and eschewed international cooperation. His refusal to develop a national strategy worsened shortages of personal protective equipment and diagnostic tests. President Trump politicized mask wearing and school reopenings and convened indoor events attended by thousands, where masks were discouraged and physical distancing was impossible. And so they got this on top of that. They're saying, OK, so clearly he was actively trying to make it worse. But let's also look at other G7 nations. So countries that are of similar economic backgrounds, I would say development. They're saying the way they did it is comparing the COVID deaths in the U.S. with the average, like the weighted average of other G7 nations. And we were just like, we had 450,000 excess deaths or something. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We had hundreds of thousands of excess deaths when comparing it to these other countries that had a response that was the somewhat opposite of what Donald Trump did.
Yeah. I mean,
so similar circumstances, different response. Here's like the surplus of deaths that we had, as sad as that sounds.
Yeah.
This sounds like from the makers of Did You Know Gun Control Might Help comes, hey, this also would have worked. The sequel no one wanted to have to ask for.
Yeah, which is like why it's like I was saying, like I wrote this up of like in sickening no shit news, but it's just up, you know, it's like something we have to actually go through measuring to understand, even though we all could see the effects of it in real time. But and on top of all this, they're saying, you know, the U.S. has already been dying at a faster rate than most G7 nations because our healthcare is just this fucked up death casino. So they're saying already, right? When compared to similar countries in the G7 already stood, like U.S. deaths already had 450,000 excess deaths in 2018 alone.
Wow.
When comparing it to other countries. Like,
and people will remember 2018 wasn't when COVID happened. Right. This is just regular times when regular we were the greatest country off in the world with our flawless plan.
Exactly. And if they say we're saying if and a lot of those deaths come from people under the age of 65.
And is that are they including, like, speaking of gun control, are they including gun deaths in that? Or that's just like healthcare related?
I think,
like,
it's just
fuckery.
Yeah, in terms of like life expectancy and those things like that. And just looking like, oh, wow. And yeah, they said if they were equivalent to like the other G7 nations, they say, because they say 2 out of every 5 people who are passing away were under the age of 65. They're saying a lot of those people, like, they would have added up to all of the people who like lost their lives from COVID, if we could even get, you know, to similar levels of life expectancy. But we have a awful, you know, there's no support system for people, and we have increasing despair deaths and all these other things that are all sort of systemic. So it's like, yeah, like on top of already the terrible leadership, the Lancet's also like, but yeah. I mean, like, this has been happening for a while in the US. This was obviously made things even worse, but we also just screaming why we need to change our healthcare system.
But it's not, like they say that number, the 450,000 in 2018 alone, is a number that's been climbing for decades. So it's not like a condition that is part of like the American character. It is all this deregulation and just letting, you know, health insurance companies and just corporations run roughshod over the population.
I would love to see the overlap of like the wealth disparity in the United States versus the unnecessary death increase in the United States. And I bet those lines look fairly similar.
Yeah.
Because they seem to like line up with people's. I mean, I've had such a recent, not even recent, years and years been dealing with a health issue that has got me firsthand, like battling with the healthcare system here, in and out of having insurance. And you just do eventually get frustrated. And you're just like, I'm done. It's too much work. I'll ride it out. And you see, this is me who has a ton of energy and is young and can deal with the weird tech and is good at being on the phone with insurance companies.
Right.
It's such a frustrating system. This stuff sometimes feels like so many overwhelmingly bleak numbers that it is hard to take in. And I think people just distance themselves from it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's just an awful thing to have to think about, like, you know, to anybody in the last year, right? To think if you've lost someone from COVID and then there's a good chance that person might still be here.
Yeah.
Because for any number of reasons. And then even on top of that, the fact that we are, I mean, like, that's like the fucking American superpower is like turning your consciousness off to like all of the just awful things that are around you, like that you can see if you bothered to look.
It's not, you know, that they're not affecting you. That's what's what sometimes you hear people saying they need it to affect them directly. And you kind of get that. You can warp yourself into being like, oh, this person didn't care about COVID till it someone they knew got it or died or something. This is affecting everybody if you just really pay attention or are willing to pay attention, because it's so prevalent and has been that it is in your face if you care.
Yeah. And it, like, even if you have, you know, let's say you're fortunate enough to have older family members that are in good health, and already trying to get a vaccination right now has been hell on earth for trying to get for older people in my family, like, who don't know how to use computers, who will go to a website that says all the appointments are filled up and say, oh, well, can't do anything. But like, no, you got to keep refreshing.
Right. And then a thing really, might open really up. It's really frustrating.
And you're like, fuck. And then now think of someone who is not in good health, who has other issues going on top of that, trying to navigate this system. And that's before COVID, too.
It's, you know, like we're like, asking the elderly in our country to battle Ticketmaster scalpers to try and live.
Right.
And you have to get on bots and refresh and snag Radiohead tickets to survive or something like that.
They're like, what's Radiohead? You're like, what's Radiohead, Grandma? Come on. Come on. This is why you're not getting a vaccine.
They're starting from the base level of, well, I used to camp out for this. And you're like, well, that's good, because you might have to get back into doing that.
Yeah, seriously.
I actually last week was volunteering in Arizona, helping with the logistics of distributing vaccines at Arizona State. And I got my first vaccine at the end of the day, which was a wonderful thing. And I got lucky enough to be one of 100 volunteers who got to do this. And I was in Arizona just spending time with my girlfriend. Anyways, talking to people about the hell they'd been through trying to get the appointments. I'm just the last person who verifies who they are before they get them.
Right.
And you see the relief on their face, but still understand the frustration that has gone through. And then a lot of people just showed up like, please, do you have any? And it's just, it feels a little bit like lifeboats on the Titanic all over and over and over again, except the government made everyone get on the boat knowing it was going to run into something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, also, I know
we pre-sold the lifeboats, actually.
Yeah. We were the thing about the lifeboats is it is once again a financially based thing.
It's essentially bottle service at the club. Yeah. Can you afford a bottle? Okay, then we're not going to come through with sparklers and the vaccine. Right.
There will be a sparkler in the lifeboat. So that'll be kind of dope. Yeah, even like the 60-year-old person who I know who was able to get it like without, you know, going through all sorts of different methods, like had to get it because somebody she knew was like working at a clinic. Like it's straight up just like an indictment of the system that it's just like corruption.
It's wild.
It's
yeah.
not working.
Hey, so how much risk did we unnecessarily put your life in? Did we put your life in enough unnecessary risk to where you are able to continue safely living? Like you right. have to like have earned. Has right. In the last year, have you almost died? If so, we might give you this thing maybe if you're quick enough right. to right. maybe not almost die.
And just to tie this to Ted Cruz's relationship with the cast of The Princess Bride.
Oh.
I want to jump ahead to this story just because something that we talk about all the time on this show, but that is worth just banging over the head is the
Inigo Montoya.
Yeah. You know,
who killed his father?
Who killed him? And they should prepare to die. The people on the right who are the ones who stand in the way of this shit being changed. I mean, there's also the centrists like the Obama administration letting the insurance industry write the legislation for Obamacare. But, you know, the people on the right are the ones who are absolutely like if they just disappeared tomorrow, you would be able to make a lot more progress and at least get the U.S. closer to these other G7 countries where it's not like, well, you got to live or die by the free market, literally. Yeah. Anyways, they tend to accuse the other side of exactly what is wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ted Cruz claimed on his podcast at the risk of
fucking
ruining
podcast?
This medium. Yes, Ted Cruz has a podcast.
Yo, fuck the Ted Cruz podcast.
Thank you.
It's fun to think about Ted Cruz figuring out Audacity.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Well, he definitely has the Audacity.
Right.
His podcast is called The Audacity of Nope, I would imagine.
He claimed that movies these days on a recent podcast often have, quote, rabid environmentalists as the bad guys, adding that, quote, the view of the left is that people are a disease. And then he points to the examples such as Avengers, Endgame, and Watchmen, he's comparing the, you know, rabid leftists who make movies with the ideology of Thanos. So he, like... I don't know if he's ever seen a movie because he's supposing that the people who make movies always agree with the views of the villain.
You can tell they agree with the views of the villain by how the villain doesn't get killed in the end.
Right.
And
right.
then lives happily ever after.
Thanos
the
notoriously
hero.
Survived Avengers Endgame.
Yeah. And oh, was right.
Alert.
He added, they buy into the Malthusian line that there are too many people in the world. People are bad and everything would be better if we had fewer people. Thanos wanted to eliminate 50% of life forms in the universe with one finger snapping. Which is
so funny
such
to
a...
watch that and get anything except the viewpoint that so then all of the good guys banded together to defeat him
right.
and find a way to fix this actually.
Like so it, you you
four
would be,
hours long and there's 38 of them.
You would be led to believe that he has never seen a movie and just like has no idea like how movies work
or
but
narrative structure.
He has these movies that he's like he is actually obsessed with. Aladdin, for instance, he yep. said that he would not go through with his wedding if he was not allowed to play A Whole New World and sing it, maybe? How I picture it.
Yeah, well, I think it was for his dance, and he wanted to... the thing was, remember, he insisted that the wedding band that did it couldn't right. play it because it had to be the CD version because that's right. the lit version, not the
and that
fucking
was
cover.
And that was the one that he had been practicing to in front of a mirror for so
right.
long. But his favorite movie, even more than Aladdin, is The Princess The Princess Bride.
That's fucked up because that was one of my favorite movies.
Me too. It's so good. It's so good. But he is in a battle with, like, so the cast of The Princess Bride kind of found out that it's his favorite movie. And the star, Cary Elwes, you know, pointed out that it must suck for Ted Cruz because literally everyone in his most beloved movie fucking hates his guts. And Ted Cruz responded with a photograph from the movie that has been autographed by Cary Elwes and says to Senator Cruz. And he was like, does this mean you want your picture back, Cary? And Cary Elwes was like, dude, that I never signed that. That's so weird. Thank you.
Hi, you Michael Jordan. No. I bought this basketball card of yours. Are you my best friend?
Right. It's and
oh
then,
shit! I never signed that.
Oh
shit.
Wow, yo, that's bro. So funny. It's so specific too.
Yeah, Mandy Patinkin has come out, and I think he wrote an editorial back in 2015, being like, you know, just talking about how Ted Cruz clearly doesn't understand The Princess Bride, which is like, in addition to, you know, a great fun movie, is like a Vietnam War metaphor, as are all movies from that era.
I just can't imagine Ted Cruz is like, well, at least I can turn on my favorite song, Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater Revival, and just listen to this pro-war, pro-military ballad.
Yeah. Anyways, shout out to the cast of Princess Bride and fuck Ted Cruz.
Look, if you're not allowed to watch movies where the actors hate you, my favorite movie is National Treasure, and John Voight probably thinks I'm a piece of shit.
Right.
So, everyone
That's
else
what I was
like
thinking.
Me.
Our writer, J.M. McNabb, wrote this up and was like, could you imagine like loving a movie where you know everybody hates your guts? And like, well, not specifically, like Bruce Willis doesn't know I exist, but I bet he would be like, you fucking punk. He would probably hate me and think I was whack for asking him to put on a mask while outside of his home. Anyways, fuck Ted Cruz, I think, is the moral of that story.
Also, I want everyone to know who's listening. This is the longest single section of notes I've ever seen you guys have for any topic in the show in the history of me doing it for Ted Cruz being dragged by the cast of The Princess Bride.
It's just
five pages in a Google Doc.
We're not fucking around. We're not fucking around. We got to know it from every angle.
Three lines in here is 500,000 dead from pandemic, but then just under it is 7.5 pages of a Google Doc of Princess Bride, which I believe is okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's, you know, that's the credit to JM. He's thorough with it.
And I don't want to admit to it now. I have never seen The Princess Bride,
oh,
but
man.
I think it's
man.
Important for me to say.
It's not important. It's just a fun movie with Andre whatever. The Giant. Being
it's all awesome. It's whatever. Yeah. We're not. I've moved past having reactions like that. I was like, oh, you've never seen that?
Yeah.
It just felt important for the context of the entire conversation.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
If everyone thought I was deflecting to National Treasure too much, I apologize.
Your pro-John Voight stance. I mean, him and Anaconda? Come on. The thing, but like Ted Cruz, he really has the worst taste in movies. Like when you know that his favorite movies are Aladdin and Princess Bride, he's clearly like has to live in a world where he like regresses to these sort of childlike fantasy stories that
right.
like keep him protected from like the reality of the cruel world.
Right.
So
I don't know a lot about The Princess Bride, but there's this guy in the mask here in the pictures. Does Ted Cruz just like movies where young men pretend?
They do have the same theme of a guy who like knows a girl and then comes back undercover and pretends to be something he's not. And like,
wow, this doesn't relate anything to any conspiracy theories about who Ted Cruz might actually be.
I do. So somebody
or tweeted, Heidi Cruz's relationship with him.
Right. Huh. Interesting.
Because remember, like there's that one thing about where his daughter was so clear eyed about like how like the mom like could have just exercised her agency and left Ted Cruz.
Oh, right. Yeah. During his like run for president, she was like, Mom, you really fucked up by marrying this guy. You could have done
why
better.
Why did you quit your job? You don't make money? And she's like, well, no, but if he's president, and she's like, well, do you make money as first lady? She's like, no. And she's like, then why would you do that, Mom?
Yeah. Oh man, but he's a heroic man who stands up for the women he loves. I wonder. I bet he is. I don't know. I won't speculate, but I think he would probably be more identifying with the characters who have like the strong person come in and sweep them off their feet and protect them, because he's certainly not doing that. He's more throw my wife under the bus after somebody calls her unattractive.
Yeah. We call those heroes.
Yes.
In 80s movies.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Let's talk about cocaine hippopotamuses. Let's keep
the
it.
The yayo hippos, hippopotami, yayo hippo. Of Colombia.
Hippopotamo.
You know, Pablo Escobar, El Padrino, the most famous narco ever. You know, left many legacies behind in his death, but aside from just the bustling cocaine trafficking network, there was a ton of wild animals that he had at his like estate up in the hills near, I think, Bogota. But Anyway, when he died in 93, like the government went there like, this motherfucker has a full-on zoo with all these exotic animals that should not be here. They're like, what are we going to do with this? So most of them they were able to put into different zoos because like they had the actual facilities to handle these animals. But the biggest problem that they had were these African hippos that he had. They were just so big. They didn't know where to fucking put them. Like just moving them around was like a huge thing. So they figured, look, let's just lock the gates and leave them there. And
smart.
Hopefully they'll just die from neglect. So fast forward, they in fact did not die. they fucking thrived. And now we're at this point where there's like a lot of biologists and ecologists like are raising concerns. And it's like this huge debate right now over, because like they've become an invasive species in like the River Magdalena River Basin area. They're like, we actually need to cull them for this to not get out of hand. But it's kicked off like a massive debate over, do they need to be culled? Is there a way to sterilize them? Most of the people in Colombia like love the hippos too, like just sort right. of like the photos of them. So they have a very unique problem that this massive coke dealer left behind them.
And they took over the drug trade. The hippos took over the drug trade. They're among the most dangerous species to humans because the ratio of how adorable they are to how quickly they will literally bite you in half.
Right.
Like that's what they're known for doing. They're like deadlier than crocodiles.
I think they're like right after mosquitoes, aren't they? It's like mosquitoes they're overwhelmingly so kill more people than any other animal for obvious reasons, but hippos like feel like they murder more humans than any other animals. And I'm down. This feels like the plot to that movie Annihilation that I didn't understand, where just kind of something takes over and we think we can tell it not to. And it's like, this isn't you anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
This is ours. I mean, let him have it.
To the danger statistic, in 2016, like there was a report saying up until 2016, they were saying hippos were killing around 500 people a year in Africa.
That's a lot of people.
We're so close to the hippo. It's huge.
And the wild thing, too, is like Colombia is like a fucking vacation. It's like an Eden for these hippopotami, hippos. Like it's completely different than Africa. And it's like actually it's to their benefit. They're saying it's, quote, an evolutionary opportunity. They have no natural predators in South America, so they can reproduce much more easily. The weather helps. Because of the droughts that happen in Africa, that acts as like population control mechanisms that are natural. Colombia, baby, it's nice and damp. There is no fucking drought. And that means now that like it's creating an ideal environment where now they are reproducing at earlier ages than they even would in Africa.
I love
it. So that the numbers they're looking at, they're saying like right now there's around 80 to 120 hippos. By 2034, there could be over 1,200 if they don't actually begin putting controls in place. And so, like, some people just want to shoot them. Other people want to sterilize them. But I just want to point to this. In 2009, the public went nuts when the Colombian army, as they say, quote, gunned down the hippo Pepe in 2009 it was deemed a threat to local communities. It was enough to lead authorities to make hippos legally protected, which is now an obstacle to any plans to cull them. So it's wild.
I just have never been that hippos. One animal thrives and now we're like, it's news. Sorry, one species that they luck into right. something, then they get it. Just let them do what they want. If you want to kill the hippos, I don't know how much a hippo weighs. You should have an equal weight amount of humans fighting it with their hands. So if they weigh 10,000 pounds, then you could have 10,000 pounds of human fight them to the death. And that could be, you know, however many 50, 200 pound guys or 100 pound martial artists. Right. It's up to them on how they want to divvy up the poundage. But that's the only, look, give the hippos their land. What are you going to, there's no way that you can farm in the land that Pablo Escobar had. It's all tunnels. It's all secret tunnels. So there's no, you can't till this. You're going to break into another tunnel. So just give, I'm just team hippo. I'm ignorant to the whole topic. I barely even know anything about the geography of where these things are, aside from the terms you're saying. I don't know the difference in the landscape. I enjoy you explaining why the hippos are thriving. It's not the hippos' fault they're there.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that's why they're trying to, because they're, you know, there's people pointing to like the dangers it faces, like that it could affect like the chemistry of like the riverways, and that would affect the fish right. populations.
Their poop
and things
is toxic.
Like that.
Yeah.
There's also studies that say it's not, the effect isn't as great as they're reporting it. So like right now, I think it seems to be that there's maybe two forms of thought of like, one is like, let's just kill them all. Right. And another is like, let's be a little more humane about this because we're not also don't see as much of like the alarm, because the other thing is, too, there haven't been any recorded deaths from any of the hippos. So there's still very much the public sees them as just like these animals that are here and they're like, oh, cool.
Right. I wonder if maybe he got tough. Like one of the like really nice families of hippos and like these are going to be like the dog. What dogs are to wolves of hippopotamus?
If we could take all of my knowledge of hippos, I think if they're hungry, what you need to do is give them
the
small
marbles.
White
yeah.
marbles, uh-huh. and then they'll be less hungry, and yep. your dad will get mad and get rid of the game.
Yeah. Like, for example, one of the biologists, Natalie Castelblanco, who was like one of the people who was talking about like the issues and possible solutions, including, you know, killing them. She immediately received death threats from the public.
That's what I'm saying. I mean,
yeah, like it's hard because I think it's one thing when you hear an invasive species is a plant or an insect.
Right.
But like when you have this thing that in our like children's books, hippo is never a thing of like, oh, hippo. It's always like, and then there's big hippo that is nice, that we still have like this relationship to them where they're like, they're mammals.
So yeah. this scientist, Castel Blanco. I need to know if Castel is translates to castle. I just need to know if their last name's White Castle. It's not really related to the hippo situation.
Just real hungry.
But this is either my fourth favorite person or my favorite person, depending on how this translation pans out.
That's but I do think that is like all of our invasive species to this point, none of them have been adorable. We've had zebra mussels. We've had like, you know, carp. We've had, you know,
right.
things that were people are going to be fine getting rid of, but
yeah.
hippos are too cute.
Baby hippos are, it's one of the biggest discrepancies from baby animal to full size animal of like the cuteness scale.
Yeah.
And so if you show someone a baby hippo, no matter what you're, if you're saying this baby hippo figured out
must
guns,
be shot in the head.
Like if you're like this hippo grew thumbs and figured out guns and cybersecurity. Like yeah. hacking, but look at it, and people be like, "We got it. We can't do anything about that."
Yeah. Yeah. What are we gonna
do? We can't
do?
Impeach that hippo. Come on,
yeah, I know.
Come on,
didn't know what it was doing. It's out of office anyway.
That hippo didn't incite anything.
Let's do impeachment real quick.
Girl, I'm talking about impeaching this creep.
The Democrats wrapped up the impeachment managers, I guess is what we're calling yes. them. Wrapped up their case. The Republicans continue to cartoonishly ignore it, like they're a petulant kid with like a teacher they don't like. Rand Paul sat with his back to the screen while they were presenting things, taking notes, aka probably like doodling on his notepad, and then left halfway through the manager's description of the president putting Mike Pence's life in danger.
Yeah,
I mean they're
Josh
doing.
Hawley was like laying down in the gallery.
Yeah, they're like even the. Very conservative Wall Street Journal editorial board is like, it looks bad. Like the nothing's going to happen, obviously. Like these guys are making it clear nothing's going to happen.
Right.
But like this is a very bad look. And like he should never run for a Republican office again. But that's the whole thing is.
Yeah, I think the only recourse people are going to have is to get on the asses of corporations that continue to donate to these people.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
like because yeah. there's no way to fucking reason, not even a 14-minute video that would make anyone shiver at how like intense all this shit was, especially for the people that were fucking there, that you could watch that and still be like, yep, can't do anything about that. We know that's coming. And yeah, like I feel like even when you hear about Mitch McConnell, he's apparently not pressuring senators to do anything. Like, he's not going one
Same
way or the other.
Vote your conscience, yeah.
Yeah. And part of that is, you know, with him, he is worried about the money. Where
right.
does all the super PAC money go? Where does all the corporate money go? And if they, his concern, the only thing in the calculus of Mitch McConnell is, if we let this guy off after how bad and how glaringly obvious it was that we just sort of just turned the other way and just went through with acquitting him, that could end up hurting us in terms of our fundraising. That's the only thing they care about. So I think the only other chip that is going to even be able to be played in terms of some kind of effect, punitive effect on the Republicans, is to then come after the people who fund them. Because it's not going to happen in this impeachment trial, as we see people like, it's like they were avoiding to see like video clips from like you getting really fucking drunk the night before. And right. It's like embarrassing to see like, oh, dude, I don't need to see that right now. Like, no, watch this part. Like, no, I'm good. I'm good. Like, what they're doing.
The editorial in the Wall Street Journal is interesting because they're like putting a lot, they're like, and Trump will never live this down. The stain is permanent on him, alongside like describing these senators like, you know, doing noises like as they're presenting their case, just like doing the most cartoonish, like I can't hear you shit.
You know, the people who definitely didn't have bad things to say about Nancy Pelosi tearing up a blank piece of paper before a speech once. Right. Mm-hmm.
And they're not drawing the connection that that's also a hideous look for them, which is weird. I don't know. Like, it does seem like in the public eye, if somebody is mad about the president's actions, they should be mad about this complete disregard for any consequences.
It's the base. They don't know what to do. They're playing to a base that
I think there's some people in areas and districts and states where they just believe that it's Trump ride or die or it's not Trump ride or die. You can become a senator if you're a former college football coach who says I stand with Trump and doesn't even campaign. Right. So they just sort of even
that's
like
how
if you
strong
get to,
that brand is.
Yeah. If you get to the nightmare that is my home state's Josh Hawley, these are just people who double, triple, quadruple down because they know that when it comes down to like grinding out reelection, they're going to be running against someone they can call a socialist and win.
Right.
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 Yeah. And then it's like it's really hard to think of what happens after this, because clearly this is the moment that they need to indicate to the country that they know what's at stake. And they're saying, we know what's at stake and we're actually voting for the shitty outcome. That's what we want. We want the hellscape. That's what we're voting for. And I think that's what people need to connect a bit, is that there's an entire apparatus in basically the Republican Party that's there to just say, we're here to actually accelerate the coming of the American hellscape. Even more so than it already is, like fully
because they make a little bit
autocracy.
More money under that hellscape in the short term. So
yeah,
it makes
it's
it
like
a
okay,
bit
I'll grind it out, and then when because let's see how many of these people actually stay. If we're at a point where the country really starts to fall apart even more, how many people are gonna like? How many Republicans are like, we actually need to do something about this, or are they gonna be further insulated and be like, I don't know, there's like a group of angry people, which are actually just downtrodden poor people we've ignored, that we're just going to treat as enemies of the state now.
Yeah. I mean, the whole kind of alignment seems like it could be shifting, but like they don't really have a way to know. Like QAnon obviously is polling worse than it was before, but then there's a poll that's saying 4 in 10 Republicans think if elected leaders will not protect America, the people must do it themselves, even if it requires violent actions, is a finding in a recent poll. I think they're like, well, on the one hand, this is a really bad look. On the other, that's a lot of energy that's storming that Capitol, and those people probably will vote in the future, and they're not going to go away. So we'll just ride that wave.
Which was funny, though, because remember, did you see a lot of the charging documents that there were people that stormed the Capitol that didn't vote?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? Like, so many of them didn't vote.
Yeah.
So when it's rigged, so it's just you know what I mean? When it's rigged from the start, their vote was probably dead people vote. It makes me feel crazy to even pretend to try.
Their energy, though, is like, it's not for voting. It's for violence. So
it's just
for
hatred.
Them to think that they need to they can somehow do something with that energy in the context of elections is completely misguided, because these are people who don't give a shit about what happens in an election, because at the end of the day, it's like, do we still have de facto white supremacy? Which box are we ticking? If it's no, then we're turning up.
Right. Yeah. Well, Kyle, it's been a pleasure, as always, having you on the Daily Zeitgeist.
Thank
man.
You
Where
for having
people,
me.
People find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff.
Well, I'm at Kyle Ayers on most of the stuff. So you can find me on there if you like to follow on that stuff. Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's where I post about the other stuff. So, you know, it's a good way to find everybody. I got a podcast called Never Seen It, where comedians rewrite movies they've never seen, and we read their scripts of what they just figured the movie probably is. So you can also check that out if you like movies and stuff.
And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yes, I laughed really hard at this tweet. It's by @mallcats. It's not even someone I know. Their name is Quarantina Faye, which is funny. But it said, my sister works in the mental health field. One day she told me, no one in this world is fully realized except Jack Black. I carry that with me wherever I go.
I like the idea that there's like mental health conferences that are like, and as we know, Jack Black is.
Yeah, once again, we'll be watching School of Rock and everyone cheers.
Miles, where can people find you and follow you?
Twitter, Instagram, @MilesOfGray. Also check out the other podcast, 420 Day Fiance, talking all kinds of trash, TV, burning that tree V. Let's see, some tweets that I like. First one from Reductress, @Reductress. Slay, this private prison is woman owned. I love that one. Another one is from @Kellycopter saying, walking downhill is so embarrassing. Like, oh, look at me doing a little trot like a stupid fucking horse. I'd rather be dead. Keep going. I got so many actually because I have not been on Twitter and I just looked at a couple things. Oh, this was Solomon Giorgio. Love this one. If you're happy and you know it, you are high.
that was mine. Little,
finally, from Kyle Grotzinger, Greatzinger, KGROETZ. This is just a interaction between himself and a person at Lululemon. This first line, the Lululemon sales assistant. Typically, guys get a size up when they buy these joggers. They fit really snug. Me, skeptically. Even the gay ones? Her, quietly, without missing a beat. Straight men don't buy these pants, sir.
You can find me on Twitter @Jack_O'Brien. Oatmeal influencer on Twitter tweeted, I love contactless delivery. They just throw the slop at your door and I run out like a little pig. And Mike Ginn tweeted, if I were an anti-homeless architect, I'd design a 50-foot high bench and then jump off it.
There you go.
You can find me on Twitter @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter @DailyZeitgeist. We're @TheDailyZeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we recommend. We're going to recommend songs on a Spotify playlist instead of playing them here.
You know, just want to tighten up a little bit. First of all, I just want to say, InfieldFly47 on Spotify is the user who actually... this person got the better Spotify playlist than the one I was even making. So we're going to have to link to this one because every day this person has put every song when it's available on this playlist. So check out the playlist, the songs we rode out on. Pretty easy to remember if you listen to this show. And it's all right there. And the song that will be there momentarily is a track called Rico Suave. Wait, let me make sure I got the name right.
Rico Suave by Jerome?
No, it's actually Rico Suave Bossa Nova by Azimuth, which is not Azimuth, the like UK band from like long ago. This is from Azimuth is like this Brazilian jazz funk trio from the 70s. So their shit is fucking, it's spicy, baby. You know, it's got that jinga, as the Brasileiros only know how to do. So yeah, check this one out. Rico Suave Bossa Nova.
All right, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for this morning. We are back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring the Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hey fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, the podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Like our recent episode with sisters Regina and Raina King about the why behind their production company, Royal Ties.
We have such a huge love for storytelling without walls, without barriers.
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.